spirit, now I rise to the top. Now I give it everything that I got. Yeah, I'm gon' ball, yeah, I'm gon' be prepared for them suckers that be hating on me. Raised in the world that's so cold, why so much hate, I don't know. Stereotyped and they can't see how it is growing up as a young G.
We're back here once again, another week on the Tony Sands Show. I'm Tony Sands, joined with my guys, Eric Cruz and Mr. Biz out of Dallas. What's going on, guys? Welcome to the Tony Sands Show.
What's going on, Tony?
What's going on, man? Hey, I'm going to tell you, high school football is big in Texas and big in Florida. Let's get right to it. Let's get to some of the playoffs. Here, let's start with you. Let's get to some of the playoffs here in South Florida. Starting with Palm Beach County.
Palm Beach County, so we got great games that will come up. We got Boynton Beach. What a surprise they were this year with the great Jackson. Lamar Jackson just make plays from the quarterback position. He'll lead Palm Beach, Boynton Beach High School into play Miami Central. And then we also have Cartman Newman down here in Palm Beach County. Just shocked everyone. They'll travel and play on the west side of Florida and go to Fort Myers. What a great team they have over there, coached by Steve Walsh, Tony. They're doing a great job. They had a three-way tiebreaker just Monday night where they beat Pahokee. Pahokee now will finish run-up in the district to Carton and Newman, and Pahokee will travel north up to Vero Beach. I mean, what a great team and great season Pahokee had with Blaze Thompson winning three state championships there at Pahokee. So what a great team they have there. So it's up and popping here in Palm Beach County in South Florida, Tony. And obviously, we know Broward County got the big showdown Friday night with Deerfield Beach and St. Thomas Aquinas. So it's on and popping here, Tony, in South Florida. Great, great field. Teams that deserve to play in the playoffs and just doing it big. Park Vista out of Boynton Beach, Florida, making the playoffs. Palm Beach Gardens, they jumping up in the playoffs. They had a playoff berth. I mean, just great football here in Palm Beach County and South Florida, period, Tony.
Let's break down this St. Thomas game. And we talked about that St. Thomas and Deerfield is not. There's no district implications involved in this game. The only thing that's involved in this game is bragging rights between these two schools. We look at Brandon Powell. We look at, you know, as a commit to the University of Miami. But then Marjorie London, who was the top running back over at St. Thomas, committed to Michigan State. He's a big guy. He stands about 6'2", 215 pounds. Fits pretty much the Big Ten type of backs, big bruisers. You know, you give it to the ball 22, 30 sometimes a game. And Marjorie fit that. But now these two teams meet up in Deerfield. Give me a breakdown on where you see Deerfield having an advantage and where you see St. Thomas possibly having an advantage when these two teams meet up.
Well, Tony, you're right. You hit it right on the head. There's a big, big rivalry. No playoff implications or district championship riding on this. This one is just a bragging rights type deal. And Deerfield have had the edge on the St. Thomas Aquinas. Over the years, they find a way to come up and win the game against St. Thomas. And that's just the deal. I know that's sitting in the back of those St. Thomas kids' heads. But they do find a way to come up and win the big game against St. Thomas. And the record beat out the wonder. But this particular night, this Friday night coming up, Tony, with St. Thomas and Deerfield Beach, you just hit it. Brandon Powell, the great athlete, committed to Miami. He's a 4-4 kid. He's just a slasher-type guy. Put his feet in the ground. He's going to go north and south now. He's going to get vertical up the field for you, Tony. He's a great back. And all you saw, you mentioned, you talked about Aaron Bone Crusher McNeil. You know, Deerfield Beach had that two-headed monster. They got two great ones there, and they're going to run the football. They're running the football. And Coach D. Lewis over there doing a great job coordinating that offense over there. And they also have the up-and-rising star, Tony and Jason Strobridge over there, my 55 defensive end. What a man he is. Tony, they have some great players over there, and they have Denaris Graham, the quarterback. He's electric. Denaris Graham can throw the ball. He can run the ball. Got great touch, got play with great accuracy, great football player, Denaris Graham. Now, you flip it over there and you got St. Thomas Aquinas. Need a knowing introduction this country over. St. Thomas Aquinas is one of the elite programs there is, Tony, your alma mater. They play great football over there. They got Devontae Pete, 6'5 receiver on the outside. They just make plays. They got the great Al Harris Jr. playing corner at St. Thomas. And they got great, great football players over at St. Thomas, and probably one of the best football programs in the state of Florida or the country, therefore. But this game, this particular game, Tony, is going to be a great game. Deerfield Beach got them at home. It's going to be exciting to watch, Tony. I can't wait to see it.
Now, when I look at this game, I'm wondering, am I going to see run, pass, or am I going to see St. Thomas decide, hey, you know, we're going to test their secondary, and we're going to test them with Wade free back, and we're going to see just how good their secondary is. Because I think if, when you look at that team overall, the weakest part of that team, I would say, is the back half of that defense, and that is that secondary part of that team. But now let's head down south. So there's a big game ahead down south between the number 2 team in the state of Florida and the number 16, Miami Central and University. Roger take this team down to that Powell Stadium to take on Miami Central. Give me a little breakdown on that. Let's break that down and see where we go with it.
Well, we all know about the Miami Central Rockets, Tony. They rank number 2 in the whole entire country. They have 1 defeat this year, coming up to the number one team in the entire country, is Booker T. Washington out of Miami, Florida. Those schools sit next door to each other. One ranked number 1 in the country, the other ranked number 2 in the country, Tony. That just speaks volume of South Florida football. But now, they'll play. Man, they got a two-headed monster just like Deerfield Beach does. They have the great Joseph Yerby at running back. He's committed to Miami. They have the awesome running back as well, and Dalvin Cook. He's committed to the University of Florida. They got the big tackle over there and Trevor Darling. He's committed to the University of Miami. He's 6'7", he's 320 pounds, move like a little alley cat, great athleticism. They got great players over there. Blake Thompson is also offensive guard. He's committed to the University of South Florida. So they got great football players over there, great program over there. Coach Smith over there is a former University of Miami player, doing a great job over there. But then you flip it over now. You talk about university school and the great Roger Harris. His name is coming up for this FAU job down here, Tony. He's an outstanding young man. He's a class act. He's the kind of guy that you want your kid to be around. He's the kind of guy that you want your kid to play for. And he got some great football players over there. Quincy Wilson, the University of Florida commit. He also have a Yerby over there. He's also committed to Notre Dame. Great football program, Tony. It's going to be electric. 2 good staffs, 2 good individual players and football team. It's going to be a great game, Tony. It's going to be a Trafalgar Park in Miami. Don't want to miss it.
I'm telling you, so if you're in South Florida and you want to get a great game on a Saturday night, you can head down to Miami, the Trafalgar Power Stadium, and watch University School and Miami Central, because it is going to be that game here in South Florida. And as I told you, Friday night, you can catch St. Thomas and DFL in. Now, you talk about FAU, and we bought this. That's not, because I know our fans want to understand what's going on with that. FAU, as they know, go through, you know, Blaine was let go due to some issues that he was allegedly seen smoking marijuana. And now there are some coaches that you said that's starting to pop up. You know, John Pickle, it was stated earlier in the week that he possibly interviewed for the job, but then I see as late as tonight that was a false rumor. I don't know how true that is. I don't know if people really didn't want that to get out, hearing Ohio State would look bad upon him, but we also know there are several other names here that is popping up for that job. And let's give us a couple more names that you are hearing about, Eric, in reference to that.
Well, I'm hearing the offensive coordinator, Eddie Grant from Cincinnati, University of Cincinnati. Eddie Grant recruits South Florida heavily for the last 16 years. Eddie Grant has made a name for himself here. He gets jobs. He gets it done. He comes here in South Florida. Everyone here in South Florida likes Eddie Grant because he gets kids whatever university he goes to. His first stop is going to be Dade, Broward, Palm Beach County. So Eddie Grant is a name that's being mentioned over there. They're throwing around over there at the Florida Atlantic University. Be a great hire. Also, Willie Martinez, defensive back coach over at the University of Texas, former defensive coordinator for Mark Rick over there at the Georgia Bulldogs. Got tons of experience. He's a local guy, went to Miami Hialeah High School. So he got Florida roots. He's from here. Everyone knows Willie Martinez. He recruits South Florida. So I think Willie Martinez, Eddie Grant could be a great, great choice and a great pick for FAU, if not the great Roger Heritage at University School.
Let's get the people that want to understand about the recruiting process, where could they go to Raw Recruit to get that information?
Tony, just simply go to the website, you know, www.raw-recruits.net. That's raw-recruits.net. You'll see all updated. Every kid here in the South Florida area, state of Florida, there is in the back end for the login. You see everything. You'll see the Raw Recruit show. Everything is there, Tony. It's www.raw-recruits.net.
And there you heard it, Raw Recruits. And that's it. Let's get into Dallas. We talked about the state of Florida. Let's get into Dallas. Give us a couple of the rundowns of some big games in the Dallas metropolitan area that people can go and watch and see some exciting football in the Dallas area.
We got one more week of high school football lined up in under Dallas. I guess the Texas area in general. With it being so many teams in Texas, we really don't know what the parents would be. But right now we have a few districts that, you know, are basically battling out with this final week, or teams that are battling out to get that final playoff spot, or to, you know, be that number one seed in the district. And I'm going to go with a district that I'm pretty familiar with. I lived in this area, and that's District 5-5A. That's the Coppell Cowboys, the Hebron Hawks, then Ryan Raiders. Those are just some of the front runners in that district. Coppell is basically leading the district right now. And, you know, they came up with a big win last week over Den Ryan. Den Ryan used to be a powerhouse in Texas, but in most recent years they've kind of, you know, fell back. They have pretty strong teams each and every year, but they haven't been as strong as they have been in recent years. They made the play. I want to say they made the state championship game about 3 years ago and fell short. But, like I said, they're a very well-coached team, very strong team, and they're looking to, you know, get into this playoffs this season and, you know, make that name or get that name that they had at one point in time, get that name back at that state powerhouse team out of that Denton area. They play Flowermound. And Flowermound is really not a strong team, but Flowermound has had this is probably one of the best seasons they've had in the last 10 years, and they're fighting for that final spot in the playoffs. If they're able to win, talking about Flowermound here, then they'll be able to, you know, jump in the playoffs for the first time, I want to say, in the last 6 years. I don't think they'll win this game, but it should be an interesting game. Like I said, Flowermount has one of the best teams that they've had in many years, and they're going against a perennial district powerhouse in the Denton Ryan Raiders. That should be an exciting game. I'll be in Dallas this week to check that one out this Friday. It has playoff implications on it. The fans are going to be crazy. The stadium's going to be rocking. The lights are going to be on, and I look ready for it. I'm looking forward to seeing this game.
And I'm quite sure it will be a sellout in Dallas, or they do sell out the stadium in Dallas. Now, there's some things going on with the Miami Dolphins. And, you know, everybody's talking about that hot topic. We're going to get into that. We're going to head to a commercial break, and then we're going to get into Richie Incognito. Did he stay incognito, or did he let go? Here on the Tony Sands Show.
If you have the need for speed, or do you simply just want to lose weight, or get the best training to help you develop your skills, whether it's football or any other sport, just to name a few different skills you can learn, like agility, balance, coordination, assistance, and resistance. In order to be the best, you got to get trained by the best. Tony Sands at GetSensational.com. For more information, call 954-691-7804. Once again, 954-691-7804. Call now.
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah, I heard you.
It was already written, I would rise to the top. Now I give it everything that I got. Yeah, I'm gon' ball, yeah, I'm gon' be prepared for them suckers that be hating on me. Raised in the world that's so cold. Why so much hate, I don't know. Stereotyped and they can't see how it is growing up as a young G.
The Miami Dolphins and J.R. Truffle, Richie Incognito. Was it locker room play or was it bullying? I'm trying to find out because I know myself, in certain instances, some of this stuff would be called stuff that stayed in the locker room, but some of the things were not. I know Warren Sapp spoke about this, and he said Richie Incognito called him the N-word during a 2007 game, and he told Richie Incognito he would punch him in his mouth. He would punch Richie Incognito in his mouth. Bills, give me your opinion on it. What do you think is locker room play, or was this outright bullying?
I don't think it was locker room play, Tony. You know, I've heard, you know, many stories about Richie Incognito. You know, he was involved in the incident in the preseason with defensive tackle from the Houston Texans, Antonio Smith. You know, when Antonio Smith, you know, was basically just fed up with the antics of Richie Incognito. And he, you know, some kind of way ended up with his helmet and, you know, proceeded to swing it at him and directed towards his head or his face, but never connected. And he was suspended for one game. But he's had plenty of players, you know, say that this is one of the dirtiest, you know, one of the most volatile players on the field that for the Miami Dolphins, you know. In the incident with him and Martin, I just really think it was bullying, man. Everybody knows what the stories come out about this kid, Martin. He's not very, you know, he was a rookie last season. He's a second-year player, and he's not, you know, a very demonstrative type, you know, player. He doesn't have a very demonstrative type personality. He's actually just a football player, you know. I think he's just a big guy, you know, with some athletic ability, and, you know, what else is there for him to do out here besides play the game of football and be an offensive lineman? You know, I don't know if that's really where his heart's at, you know, but he's on the team. He obviously has some type of skill. But as far as Richie Incognito, his comments and the messages that he, you know, sent this guy and the way he was treating this guy is totally uncalled for, you know, totally unprofessional. Yeah, I get the coaches told him, you know, to maybe toughen this guy up, but it's a limit to each and everything that we do on this earth. You know, and I really think that he's went over the limit as far as what he was told to do or what they expected for him to do. You know, with the racial slurs and, the threat about slapping his mother across the face. You know, those are things that I, as a grown man, would not tolerate for any woman or man to say to me. You know, and I don't blame Martin for going about it the way that he went about it. But he kind of looked like a wuss to me, you know. Like, I just feel like if someone's to talk to you in that manner, you know, you as a man, you have to stand up to this type of person. You know, like, you can't allow these things to happen. And now, you know, he came out and, you know, he walks away from the team. And the story's been, you know, blown up, like, tremendously. And it's just, it's a sad story at the same time, but Richie Incognito, there's no place for the things that he does in the NFL. Now, I know he's a good offensive lineman. I wouldn't say he's a great offensive lineman, but he's a serviceable offensive lineman, and he does have skills. But the antics that he does, and some of the things that I've heard and read about this guy, is just uncalled for, you know. And I honestly think that he should be suspended indefinitely for the rest of the season, and, you know, maybe with the opportunity to come back next season.
If you're a guy, you spent 7-8 years in one of what I would consider the black hole, one of the toughest locker rooms probably in the NFL. What's your take on this situation?
I'll tell you what, Tony. You know, playing for the Raiders for 6 years, been in that locker room with Howie Long is a Hall of Famer, Mike Haynes a Hall of Famer, Marcus Allen is a Hall of Famer. You got Roger Craig, Willie Gault, being in that locker room with Otis Wilson, being in that locker room with Greg Townsend, being in that locker room with Bo Jackson. I tell you what, Tony, a guy like Richard Carnito wouldn't last 2 days, you know, those kind of guys, Bill Kakel, he wouldn't last 2 days in there using that type of language, directing it toward grown men. That's the first and foremost. Now, I understand the Dolphins say you need to toughen Jonathan Martin up a little bit, but at the same time, you don't use that kind of slur. You don't use that language to toughen him up. You don't use that. That's not being tough when you use that kind of language. Like Art Shell always tells us, toughness is not when you run out there and rap in your mouth and see how loud you can talk and see how much you can talk about somebody's mom or call them racial slurs. That's not toughness. Toughness is when you go out there and knock him on his butt and you pick him up, pull him up, get him on his feet, and then you go knock him on his butt again, and you keep repeating that effort. So that's toughness. So with being in the locker room with the Raiders, that wouldn't last not 1 day when you got people like that. I mean, that's unexcusable action on Richie Carnito action. I think that's very unexcusable. I think they need to take action on that like they have. It's not a place for the it's almost a touchy subject. It's almost like the politics stuff. It's a really, really touchy subject. And when you got a group of guys like that in the locker room, we had a close-knit locker room in that in Los Angeles with the Raiders. And we was like a brotherhood. We was a brotherhood, Tony. And we would not allow somebody like that, somebody in that Dolphin locker room trying to control that situation and it didn't happen. And it causing the team to have a bad effect because of it.
But now, B, I ask you this question, and because as we were hearing so many players saying, it's the culture of the NFL. What I'm trying to figure out, when I hear them say that, what part of the culture is it? What some of the things that Incognito did to this guy, or whether the N-word has become a culture thing to where the sting of it has been deteriorated because everyone is using it. I'm still having a hard time understanding how this word has become so wide used where it has no more sting. And now people are saying, you know, you have some players saying now, coming out there saying Incognito is more black than Dr. Martin. When I last checked and I last saw him walk out of his apartment when Town 7 questioned him, still looked at the Caucasian persuasion to me. And Jonathan Martin looked more of a black persuasion. So I'm still trying to grasp around it. I know a lot of these guys love Incognito, but I still say, and a lot of these guys are backing him. But now we got to understand Jonathan Martin did check himself into a hospital dealing with stress. And some of the players down here saying probably this was his way of saying they didn't want to play no more, pretty much along the same lines of a Ricky Williams, where he decided, hey, you know what? I don't want to play no more. I don't want to look like I walked away from a game. I'll let them drug test me. I fell a drug test, and now it's clear to me and saying they took me out of the league versus saying that I walked away from the game. And it gives me still that strong profile that I am still a man. What's your take on that?
Well, I tell you what, now, that word is used very loosely. I was at a practice, a high school practice, just last week down at Palm Beach Central, and I had a couple white kids using the N-word toward a couple of black kids. And I turned around and I addressed it. I said, please don't use that around me. Now, they let you use that. That's on them. But don't use that word around me, not in my presence. That's very disrespectful in my presence. Don't use it. You shouldn't be doing it at all, point blank, period. But Richie Carnito and Jonathan Martin, like I said, Jonathan Martin should have stopped that long time ago. The Dolphins locker room should have stopped that long time ago using that type of language in a locker room. That should be cut out. We didn't use that kind of language in our locker room out in with the Raiders. That wasn't tolerated. Now, this younger group here, this younger generation, they are using that language. They are using that language, and the whites are using it very freely, and they letting them get away with it, Tony. They're letting it away with it, and that's not the way it is. So that's, then when it comes out and a problem like this comes, then they break it, and then it hits the media, and it's taken out of context. Now, I believe they do use that language in the locker room. They really do, the whites and the blacks. certain blacks, whites do, but not all the whites does it, because it's still a little touchy there. It's not as much as it was before in my day and your day, but it's not as touchy right now, because of we got a different era where the rappers use it all the time. You ride around, you stop at the red light, you hear the music, a white guy or a black guy with the music blasting, and that word is used. So they are using it very freely, this generation here, and I think it's wrong. They need to be addressed, then we won't have this type of issue like we're having with Richie Cognito and Jonathan Martin.
I definitely tell you something. You know, when we look at this word, I tend to think sometimes it is a generational word or is a sectional word. What I mean by sectional, a section, certain section of the country looks at this word more loosely and more, you know, than others. Like, take for instance, blacks in Mississippi or blacks in Georgia versus blacks in New York and blacks in California. Or is it just something that all blacks say, hey, this is something that is not acceptable to use? Or do we put too much emphasis has become on this word that anytime it's used, everybody tends to say it's a race card? Now, I don't say, and wonder, it's something to say that the young man is racist. I don't think he's racist. I think he was using racial overtone that has made this situation even more magnified than some of the words in use. When you use the last hit, you know, he called Warren Sapp the N-word in the game of play. Some people say, oh, they want to see how the word was used. They want to hear the audio tape, because I guess if the audio tape, it sounds like they're joking, it's okay. And I think that has become more of the culture itself. Let me hear what he's saying versus back when, what was the guy with the, which team was that? With the Denver Broncos that used it at the tight end that used it at the concert where he used it as a receiver. As a matter of fact, he used it and they suspended him for a little time and let him go to diversity training and he came back. So you see this kind of stuff happening with Incognito.
I do know. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, go ahead.
Yeah, this is a little different than the situation with the receiver from the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm not sure if they'll put Incognito in that same class or treatment program that Roddy Cooper went through. With the situation being, you know, Roddy Cooper didn't have any prior, you know, history as far as using racial slurs or being that type of player, you know. That type of person in general. Incognito, he's had these run-ins. He's had these things said about him, you know, throughout his career. You know, he's been voted as one of the most dirtiest players on the field, you know, and that personality and that just fits him. You know, I just to go back to what y'all was saying about the word and the way it's used, I don't know how, I really can't speak for how it's used, you know, in the state of Florida, but in Texas, I don't hear many whites using that, you know, or Caucasian people, you know, to be politically correct, using that that term towards, you know, our African American people in this state. You know, it's a little, I guess it's still a shaky thing, you know, when it comes to that word. But I do agree with y'all. It is used very, very, very loosely as far as generation, my generation, especially. You know. Kids just, you know, you can hear kids using the word, you know, every day. You know, I hear my little brother, you know, and his friends and his buddies, or these people walking down the street, or people that I know using the word. I try not to use it, you know, often. I won't say I haven't used it, you know, but because I have. But, you know, it's just a word that I don't think the content of it is really directed, or is directed like it was, you know, in the past, you know, 60, 70, or even before that. Even the 80s, you know, but now it's used so loosely that everybody, every race uses this word, you know, like it's just a word, like just saying, hey, man, you know, they use that word just like the same way.
But I think what they kind of dress the word up to say, okay, it's just a meaning for ignorant person. But we know back in the day it was only addressed to
to one type of person. That was the African-American. But now they're saying, oh, it's just a cold, oh, it's just an ignorant person, so you shouldn't get offended by it. And I don't see that. It's, you know, there's certain words and certain things that you can't even say in corporate America that would get you fired if you call a certain race out of their name. And we have a lot of those here in South Florida. So, you got to be ever so careful, I think, of the words that we use now. And we're kind of hiding behind locker room as it's okay. A lot of players now with the Dolphins have, like I told you, stood up for Richie Incognito, saying that he's not present. They know this guy. But now another revelation came out. If you heard Joe Philbin yesterday, he stated that the Miami Dolphins coaches had nothing to do with this and was not aware of it. But then all of a sudden today, it came out that the coaches told this young man, as we spoke about, just a little bit of obvious, told him to toughen this guy up. Now, what kind of, how does that make the building look when you come out one day saying, I'm Derek, one day you come out saying that we didn't know, now all of a sudden you come out the next day and you're saying, we knew. I mean, that, okay, we, you know, it was rumor has it that they sent you out to toughen. You're the tough guy. You're going to toughen this guy. How do you toughen a guy that use those type of words to go and toughen a guy up like Jonathan Martin, a guy that came from Stanford, parents are lawyers. So what they're saying is there's a possibility that this guy comes from what we would consider a suburb culture and not the inner city culture. An inner city guy probably would have straightened Jonathan Martin versus a suburb guy. What's your take on that here?
You're exactly right, Tony. The coaches claim didn't know anything about it, had no knowledge of what was going on. And all of a sudden today, we hear that the coaches asked Richie Incognito to toughen this guy up. Now, it's a double-edged sword. There's two parts to that, whereas I'm quite sure, you know, defending the Dolphins coaches who asked him to do that, I'm quite sure they didn't ask him to, like I said, before toughen him up in that manner to do that. He's a great football player, Jonathan Martin. He's a big guy. You can't just grow those guys every day with guys his size, his athleticism. They want him on the football team and help him keep their job. But at the same time, he was brought up, you know, like I said, his parents was his lawyers, attorneys. And when he went to Harvard, he went to Stanford. He likes to be a suburban guy. Inner city guy would not accept that. That's not 1 second. It would stop Richie in his tracks. But Richie is part of those guys that with the black guys. He's very popular with the black guys on there. He acts black. That's what they're pertaining to. And they say that he's more black than Jonathan Martin. Jonathan Martin act like he's a white guy. Richie act like he's a black guy. That's why they're accepting that type of language. But again, there's no excuse. There's no excuse for Richie Carnito action. And like you said, he's probably using, you listen to the tape, I want to hear it as well. He's probably saying in a joking manner. Again, do I think Richie Incognito is a racist? Absolutely not, because he hangs around more blacks than he hangs around whites. He's with those guys. He party with those guys, with the black guys. He hang with more of the black guys than the white guys. We had a guy, you know, when I was at the University of Oklahoma, white guy that hung with all the black guys. He's from Idaho. Never seen a black guy in his life from Idaho. Well, the white guys on the scene called him, we all called the kid Idaho. That was his nickname. His real name is John O'Mara. He's the coach out there in New Mexico. We call him, his name is John O'Mara, but the white guys start calling him Ida Bro. We called him Idaho. They called him Ida Bro because he was Ida from.
Bro.
Right. That's what they called him, Tony.
Hanging with the brothers of reality, tell you Ida Bro. But now tell me this. Now the Dolphins play Monday night against Tampa Bay. They had a Monday night game against Tampa Bay. If the Dolphins lose this game against Tampa Bay, a team that hasn't won a game yet, does this turn up the fuel and turn up the flame possibly?
Definitely. I really think he's already with the
he's already gone
Say it again.
You think Joe Philbin pretty much is written on the wall that he will be another one of the scapegoats along with Richie Incognito that he has to go?
I mean, I'm not saying he has to go because the season is not complete. We still have 8 more games to play. But he's already on a hot seat. The Dolphins 4-4, all the money that they spent during the offseason in free agency, and they're not producing what they were expecting, producing like they expected to produce. And then you have the situation with this right here, with the coaches acting like they didn't know or stating that they didn't know these things were going on, then the reports coming out stating that they did. You know, it's just too much going on. You know, I think that Joe Philbin, the general manager, I don't even know the general manager's name right now, but I think all of them are on the hot seat because, and not necessarily with just that organization, with the NFL in general. You know, people are going to be calling for their heads. And winning at the end of the day is going to really come down to the winning at the end of the day. You know, and if they don't make the playoffs once again, then I definitely think that Joe Philbin is gone as the Miami Dolphins head coach. Without a doubt. You know, I don't think he'll be back next year. Now if they do some kind of way make the playoffs this year, they're able to protect Ryan Tannehill. They're missing 2 linemen right now. I don't know how they're going to do that. They haven't been able to protect them thus far. So with them missing 2 of their offensive linemen, I definitely don't think they'll be able to protect Ryan Tannehill. So with that being said, it could be doomsday for Joe Philbin, I think.
And here we go again, and the Dolphins fans would possibly be another guy come in. Now it's all you're running a new system. Will the Dolphins ever get back on the track that it takes to win in the NFL? But now let's switch a little bit. We're still in the NFL, but that's with coaches falling out. Have the NFL and coaching become that pressure cooking job that all of a sudden now people are starting to see, wait a minute, hold on. This job is causing the coaches to have heart attacks. Or is there something that's been going on, but now all of a sudden, in this day and age of video, it is starting to come out? What's your take on it?
I think it's a stressful job. Some of those guys don't go home at night. They sleep on the couch. They're putting in 18 and 19-hour days if they do go home, Tony. It's a very stressful deal. It's to have the highest divorce rate of any profession in this country, coaching does, and it's a very stressful deal. You work for that dollar. And it's a what have you done for me lately? League, the NFL, and college as well. And what have you done for me lately? You're winning games. I think Jeff Ireland over at the Miami Dolphins, the general manager here, experiencing that in jail as well. But with Gary Kubiak I think Jim, John Fox have a little different situation with a little heart trouble than Gary Kubiak did. It's a stressful job. Gary's job online. He's contemplating on changing quarterbacks. I mean, it just, you know, he's fighting for his job, and it's very stressful, Tony. It takes its toll, and I think it takes its toll on Gary Kubiak.
You got to remember when you talk about a high divorce rate, you got to figure when Jimmy Johnson took over the Dallas Cowboys, the one thing that he told his wife was that, hey, I can't be married to 2 things. And he outright divorced his wife and married the Dallas Cowboys. He married the Dallas Cowboys, told his wife, you can't be married to 2 things. He understood what it would take in order to get the Dallas Cowboys to be a champion. Now, do we start seeing organizations or the league start mandating how many hours a coach is able to stay in the office versus going home? Do you, you see that as a thing that may be coming up in these next couple of meetings and owners' meetings that, hey, we got to monitor now the amount of hours that is being put in the office because we are seeing guys now completely falling out during games?
I'm not sure, Tony. I really don't even know how to answer that question. They should be mandating the hours, you know, that these coaches are putting in.
from the story that I read that coaches be in the office a week, work for hours. They can work up to 100 hours a week, you know, just, you know, getting ready for game day on Sundays. And I honestly think that's entirely too much on the human body. The human body is not meant to stay up that long. It's not meant to produce those type of hours of work. You know, like rest is one of the most important things for the human body. You know, and these coaches are not getting that rest, you know, because it's so much emphasis on winning. And they feel like they have to do so much to give their team the best chance at winning football games. As long as winning is that high priority, and these coaches are getting fired left and right for not winning or not producing like they're supposed to do, I don't think they'll be able to, you know, cut back on the time spent in the office or in the watching film or at practice, because they want to win ball games, and they know that they might have to put these hours in to get their team or give their team the best opportunity to win ball games. So, you know, I do think that they might try to mandate you not able, just like they mandate practice hours, you know, during the off season or even during the season, they might have to mandate the coaches' hours, you know. But even with that being said, coaches can go home and still, you know, put in hours. They don't have to be in the office doing the work that they do, you know, to help their team get to where they need to get to. They can go home and do that without anybody ever knowing. So how can you really mandate that, Tony? I really don't know if they'll be able to.
And we're still on the fan show. We're talking about Derek Crew and Mr. Bill out of Dallas, Texas. Guys, they're still on this healthy. If you looked at it, Tony Dorsett has been told he has signs of CTE. You know, that's that chronic traumatic syndrome with the concussion. You got a guy like Tony Dorsett that, you know, I grew up watching. And there's a possibility, you know, and they're leading a lot of that to the suicide rate that has increased. Tony Dorsett is now 59 years old. 59 years old. And now we're seeing, you know, the signs of CTE in a guy like that. Because this now really brings this CTE to the forefront again, because now we're seeing what I consider for the Dallas Cowboys, one of the greatest guys to play for the Dallas Cowboys. And now he was a hero of mine, and now he has this disease. And it started to take his toll, as we know Junior Seau, when they did autopsy on him, his brain showed signs of CTE. How does this play out when it comes down to a guy like Tony Dorsett? Does this really add more light to this situation? If you look at the special that they did on ESPN, it also brought Tony Dorsett to tears. It brought him to tears, really, in this interview. A guy, strong guy, if you look at it, Tony Dorsett, brought him to tears. Heisman Trophy candidate, winner in 1976. What do you think? You taking a lot of hits in the NFL. Give me your take on knowing now that Tony Dorsett has signs of CTE.
Well, I think that Tony will share a lot of light on this case, what he's going through, and like I say, Junior Seau went through, and Dave Durson, and also they took their lives. And now you got a guy like great cowboy, America's team, you know, one of the greatest cowboys that ever wore the uniform, and Tony Dorsett. By him coming out. So I think it'll bring light because of his status, who he are. His status will bring a lot of attention to it. And he took a lot of hits. He had a lot of pounding over his whole entire body. He was a running back. And Tony, you know, is a great man. Had the opportunity to meet him on several occasions. And just an outstanding guy. But see him, like I said, on the ESPN piece, almost break down in tears there and goes through this type of situation. I think the NFL has to do something about that, because you leave your blood, sweat, and tears on that field. You know, everybody says about the money, but everybody's playing because they love the game of football. You know, money does have a big role in, but you love the game of football. And then once this come about, later in your life, when say Tony Dorsett is 59 years old, and now this disease occur on Tony, is a really detrimental, and it really should be addressed. It should be more focused on this the concussion deal than it has been.
And that's what, I heard about Julius Allen, and I heard about, some other things doing and some other players. But when I saw the piece on Tony Dorsett, it made me stand up and pay a lot more attention to this than the other players. I don't know, because I grew up watching a guy like Tony Dorsett, and I love this style of play. And it made me stand up. It almost reminded me of, we heard about the A thing, but the day that you always remember the place that you were at when Magic Johnson announced that he was safe guy. This kind of CTE thing, which is, that's where, your brain is producing more protein than normal. And it, there's a trigger down effect, and I have seen certain cases guys have some suicide effects. Now, tell me this, do you see this as really, what it is, and really now, after they, settled this deal with the players, do you see it now taking more steam, or we done settled it so we don't want to hear it no more? Do you feel like this? Do you feel like it's something that'll be swept up under the rug?
No, I don't think it could be swept under the rug, Tony. I mean, this is a serious matter, and it's out here for us to see, and for the doctors to, figure out what they can do to, help these ex-NFL players. And like you were saying, I got the opportunity to meet Tony Dorsett a couple of years back. And, meet him in person, seeing him at the, this had to be, say, 59 years old. He had to be about 56 at the time. And you would never think that never thought that he had any condition like that, because he looked like he was in great shape, But the NFL, they're trying to do everything they could do at this point to, prevent this from happening to the players of this generation. It's sad to know that they didn't do anything to help players in his generation or the generations after him. But I'm kind of happy that they're trying their best, or trying their hardest to, to find out ways to prevent these type of things from happening in the future. But like you said, I don't think it'll be able to be swept under the rug, and I my prayers go out to Tony Dorsett and his family, and I hopefully, they're able to come up with a solution or a cure, to help him. I don't want to wake up one morning and see that he, committed suicide like the late great Gene Sayer or many other, ex-NFL players. But it's sad though, Tony. It's very, very sad.
Now let's stay in the great state of Texas. Let's not move from this situation. Let's stay in the great state of Texas. Is it true that the Texas Longhorns are courting Nick Saban? Do you see this as being, Nick Saban said that's the only team that he would ever consider leaving Alabama for? Fields, you're in Texas. You're on the ground there. What are people saying about Nick Saban being tied to the University of Texas?
Well, first, we all know that Nick Saban and Mac Brown are like great, great friends. One thing I could see Nick Saban possibly being the coach of the Texas Longhorns, once Mac Brown was to step down as the coach. I don't think it will ever happen, with him being the coach and him not wanting to leave. It will only happen if, Mac said, it's time for me to retire, go sit on my couch, or maybe take an office position somewhere, it was the University of Texas. But I honestly think that Nick Saban's in the perfect place for him being with Alabama. He's been to, 4 out of the last 5 national championships. And why would he leave? He's one of the highest, if not the highest paid, you know, coach in the NCAA, you know. So I don't really see a reason for him wanting to, you know, step down as their head coach and come to Texas right now. I mean, Texas is one of the most lucrative, you know, universities or institutions in the country. But
and he also is one of the wealthiest athletic programs in the country.
Right.
He's already making $5.6 million. At this point, can Texas come in and say, hey, you know what? We're ready to make this move. It's going to give a splash. It's going to bring more seats so we can make this up. Do we give a guy like Nick Saban $7.7 million? Or, Derek, do you think this is another ploy for Nick Saban to get more money out of Alabama? What you think, Dave?
Tony.
Yeah, do you think this is a ploy for him to get more money out of Alabama versus him really being interested in going to Texas?
Tony, I think he got a great agent. As I was reading, Jimmy Saxon, I think he's doing an outstanding job of marketing Nick Saban. And, you know, Nick Saban's name speaks for itself. One of the greatest coaches to ever coach college football. For him to pursue or say his name mentioned in the Texas job is a way of just giving Nick Saban a raise at the University of Alabama. If Mac Brown stays two or three more years, Nick Saban is, what, 60, 61 years old at this point, and he claims it's just too late in his career. He's too old to go out and start a new challenge and build up the University of Texas. Turn them into a powerhouse like the University of Alabama. I think where there's smoke is fire, because Nick loves challenges. If he wins this championship, that'd be three peat for Nick Saban, three national championship rings for Nick Saban at the University of Alabama, or a three peat. That'd be his fourth. But in seven years that he's been at that university, and he's a guy that likes challenges. He's a guy. My son had an opportunity to spend 3 years over there on that staff with Nick Saban. He's a guy that likes challenges. He's a guy that gets bored and wants that new challenge. And he don't want to live the rest of his life, I don't think. That's why he have other homes outside of that, outside of state of Alabama. But I think that, like I said before, where there's smoke, it is fire. But I think it is a plot for him to get more money at the University of Alabama.
We might have lost. I definitely agree with you, though. This could possibly be a marketing scheme for Nick Saban and Pryor, you know, a couple more million out of the University of Alabama. But do you think that he would be a great fit for the University of Texas?
I think so. I think he'd be a great fit for any school that he go to. He's a big asset for any school that he go to. And the University of Texas, he'll be a great fit. I mean, they love Texas football once again, like they always do love Texas. I played at the University of Oklahoma and I had an opportunity to play for Mac Brown when he was at the University of Oklahoma. He was on our staff there at University of Oklahoma under Barry Switzer. So I think that now I know a little about Texas, you know, the Longhorns. So I think that school and that state, such great tradition in the state of Texas, great high school, the most wealthiest universities in this country, I think that would be a draw for Nick Saban. I think he'd be a fit.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think he would be a great fit for the University of Texas. I don't think he would, you know, step on the toes of Mac Brown. Like I said, I think he would, you know, allow Mac Brown to step down and then possibly come in. You know, maybe it'll be a joint thing. But today, this is our show today. You know, it's time for us to sign out here on the Tony Sands Show. I thank all of y'all for listening to us today, you know, listening to our sports topics. We're signing off. See you next week here live on the Tony Sands Show. You have a great night. See you next Wednesday.
It was already written, I will rise to the top. Now I give it everything that I got. Yeah, I'm gon' ball, yeah, I'm gon' be prepared for them suckers that be hating on me. Raised in the world that's so cold. Why so much hate, I don't know. Stereotyped and they can't see how it is growing up as a young G.